Welcome into another podcast episode for Codings Pro Magazine. I'm Stephanie Chizik, and I'm editor-in-chief of Codings Pro. Today we have with us Anton Rusing, director of IUPAT's International Finishing Trades Institute, and that stands for the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, for anyone who doesn't know. The institute is in charge of training and education, and they're actually located just down the road from me here in Baltimore. They are in Hanover, Maryland, so I'm excited to get a chance to learn a bit more about my neighbors down there. So thanks so much for joining us, Anton.
I'm happy to be here, Stephanie. Thanks for having me.
Why don't we start by giving kind of a bit of a background, either your personal background if you'd like, or IFTI.
Sure. So I'm a painter by trade, and I usually start off by telling people that because I'm a blue collar guy. I started working out in the field. And I've got some experience with, you know, the subject that we're going to talk about today. I've got a lot of experience working out in the field. I know what it's like to put your body through the rigors of, you know, the construction world. I've seen what it can do to you. So that's kind of my background. I'm a construction worker, painter by trade. Worked my way through the apprenticeship program. Started working out in the field. Started helping out around the union hall. At some point, they asked me to start working in the office, teaching classes, revising some forms, and now I find myself the director of the Finishing Trades Institute, and I have the opportunity to make a lot of really impactful changes to the way that we do business, and some of the programs that we work on. So that's kind of where I came from, and our primary purpose at the FTI is to train workers for the IUPAT. And our signatory contractors.
Okay, that's great. I mean, it sounds like you have a very kind of, organic journey from where you were and to where you are now. And it makes sense that you're a great fit for that role, obviously, since you know what people have to go through in the field, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was an interesting career path. I never picked this. I started painting to pay for college. I realized somewhere along the line that I actually loved painting. I loved working in construction, and I kind of had my foot in both worlds. At one point, I worked for EDS. I'm in the tech industry, so I have some experience in the office as well as in the field. So it's a unique path that brought me here, and everything that came before in my life kind of set me up for where I am today.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like I hear that story a lot, that a lot of contractors, particularly who we work with at Codings Pro, sort of enter the field, kind of like you said, to make money for college or between high school and college or a friend's dad or something like that, and they just sort of fell in love with it. So it's a common story and a great one to share, I think. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I see that a lot too. I a lot of people end up painting. That's what they'll say is, how do you end up painting? A lot of people take that path. You don't expect, don't really expect it, but you find that you love it.
And I actually think that's kind of maybe an interesting segue into one of the challenges that I think the industry has been having is the, finding enough people in the industry to fill these positions. Whether that's just because people don't think of it as a viable career path, or just a lack of labor in general right now across the board. I know it's not just specific to construction. So, can you speak a little bit maybe to that, to the sure. Like labor gap, I guess?
Yeah, I think one of the issues, and I experienced this in my own life. We're told from when we're little kids that if you're going to make anything out of yourself, you have to go to college. Everybody kind of focuses on the white collar world and wanting their kids to have a better life than them. That's the kind of things that we tell ourselves and tell our kids. People don't really think of construction as a viable career path when they're growing up. They want to be a doctor. They want to be a lawyer. They want to be the president. They want to be, something a little bit more white collar. I think that's part of the reason. It's not a not a glamorous lifestyle when you're on the outside looking in to the construction world. But the reality of it is, most construction workers make really good money. You don't have a bunch of student loans at the end of your apprenticeship program or the end of your training. You don't have a lot of student loans to pay back. You've made good money the whole way through. A lot of the programs today are offering college credit. Most of our apprentices graduate their apprenticeship program, and with a couple of classes, they can get their associate's degree and actually go on to their bachelor's degree as well. But not a lot of people know that, and a lot of parents want to push their kids towards, college directly. And I can tell you just my own experience when I was 18 years old, just getting out of high school, I was not ready for college. I really, it took me a few years to mature enough to understand what it takes to what kind of hard work it takes to just make it in life. And I think you need those couple of years in a lot of circumstances to mature. If you go through an apprenticeship program or you get into construction, you make good money, you learn, great skills that no one can ever take away from you. And no matter what, you always have something that you can fall back on. With my kids, I've chosen a different path than what my parents did. I tell my kids they're going through an apprenticeship before they go to college. If they decide they want to do that down the road, that's great, but I want them to learn a skilled trade before they attempt college. I want them to learn to make money. I want them to learn what a dollar's worth, how hard it is to earn. And then again, if they want to go to college after that, great. They'll have that set of skills behind them that no one can ever take away from them.
Yeah, that seems so smart. It sounds like something that maybe a little bit of a redirection in our society could benefit from across the board, not just the people who are
Absolutely.
taking those courses, but also the people who need the crew members on their team, you know. It's just so
Yep,
interesting.
absolutely.
I do know you, so you did mention a little bit ago that you have experience, you know, like you said, in the office as well as in the field. And I know that you guys also at IFTI, you have actually something in between, I would consider at least, where you have your training facility. Can you maybe walk us through a little bit about that?
Sure. So are you, do you mean at the local level or here in Hanover, what we do?
Well, I know
Or both?
I've gotten to stop by the one at Hanover, but so I guess that one,
Okay.
but also, you know, I know that you have a much wider reach across the country. So I guess just in general, sort of what does IFTI do to help the industry? You know, you've mentioned wanting to raise the bar in the industry and that kind of aspect of it.
Sure. So we have 105 training centers across the United States and Canada. We incorporate a lot of different trades, so we're not just painters. We also have glazing, drywall finishing, floor covering, wall covering installation. We have a lot of different trades, but specific to the painting industry, we have training centers all over the U.S. and Canada that train apprentices and take someone with little to no experience and teach them all the skills that are necessary for them to make a career out of it. We also do journeyman upgrade training. So when there's new techniques, new tools, new products, just to come in and upgrade your skills, we offer upgrade training for journeymen. And then in Hanover, what we do, it's a little bit different. Our Hanover facility is really designed to be a train the trainer. So most of our trainers, we occasionally will bring someone in from the outside to teach a third party type class, but most of our trainers are tradespersons that go through the apprenticeship program, that come up through the trades. They work out in the field, and we bring them in. We teach them the skills necessary to be an adult educator, so that they can go back locally and then teach those classes. So most of our instructors are homegrown, so to speak. They're painters, painters, glazers, drywall finishers. They come from the trades. They have that skill set. They have that background, and then we give them the adult education skills necessary to be able to pass on that knowledge.
Okay, that sounds great. And then, so what is kind of the overall, I guess, goal of what IFTI does? Is there, challenges obviously in the industry that we're kind of working against? I think, especially right now, if people are listening, this is taped during the COVID-19 pandemic is still going on. So, I mean, that's certainly affecting things, I'm sure, for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. It's when COVID first started, one of the issues we were really worried about people being out of work. As things started to shut down, we were worried about our members not working, not being able to go out and make money and support their families. And then we realized, once construction was deemed an essential industry, The opposite became a factor. We started worrying about people going to work while this pandemic was going on and potentially getting sick and bringing it home to their families. It's been a real challenge, from the labor perspective, just in general. That balance between wanting to go to work to make money to pay your bills, but at the same time being scared about, your own personal health and safety and that of your family. For us, from the FTI perspective, teaching those classes, not being able to have courses in person, having to shift to a distance learning model, has been difficult. We've overcome it in a lot of different ways. Just like everyone else, we've had to learn to cope with the new challenges that we're all facing today. So that's been it's been tough. It's been interesting, but I think we have risen to the challenge. Our mission essentially remains the same, and that's to raise the bar in the industry, to provide the men and women in the trades the skills necessary to go out and do their jobs, make money, provide for their family, come home safe at the end of the day. And that's our real focus. More than anything else, it's train people, teach them how to work safely, give them the skills to be able to build a career for themselves. What we don't do here is just provide jobs. What we do here is train people for their career. And it's a pretty cool thing to stand back at the end of the day and realize that you've given somebody a tool to make their life better. And that's what we really try to focus on. And we partner with a lot of organizations that have that same philosophy, raising the bar. Giving people the skills necessary to provide for their family, providing some standards in the industry, providing direction in the industry, making sure that things are done correctly. That's really all the types of things that FTI really focuses on.
Okay, great. I'm glad you expanded a little bit because I was wondering what exactly raise the bar means. And if I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like the sort of the overarching goal is to raise the I guess the application of the coatings and for the contractor. But by that end goal, you could do that, for example, by being safer in the field or knowing those tips and tricks. Is that accurate? Does that sound about right?
There's a lot of things that go into it, and when especially as a painter, a lot of people will say, painting's a redheaded stepchild of the trades, and we all kind of laugh about it when people talk about it. When you pass a water tower or building, a bridge, something like that, what the average person sees is the aesthetics. They see the paint that's on there as a decorative finish. For us, it's a protective coating. It's there to increase the lifespan of that particular structure, to provide safety from contaminations in the case of water, provide a protective coating to protect people as well. Those are the types of things that those systems are engineered. People spend a lot of money designing the coating, designing these systems, designing the structure, designing the building. And you have to protect that investment that's made. And one of the things that we really try to push for is training at all levels. The asset owners that pay these people to design these structures of these facilities, the coatings manufacturers that design the product, the people that design all the other building materials, after the installation of all of that, painting is typically one of the last trades that's in. And that final finish isn't just for aesthetics, it's to protect that structure. And you don't want somebody that's unqualified or doesn't understand how to install that, in some circumstances, multi-million dollar coating system, where if it fails, instead of getting a 20-year lifespan out of a structure, you're getting a 2 or 3 or 5 year lifespan out of that structure. So painting goes way beyond the aesthetics, and it's about asset protection, and all of those types of things. The training has to be across the board. Train people what to expect. Train people to do the installation. You make sure that you have a qualified workforce, a contractor that can actually get the job done. Make sure that there's inspections along the way to make sure that everything is done correctly. That's really what raising the bar is about, is making sure that everybody that's involved in a project from start to finish understands what's expected of them. They meet the standards or the specifications that's laid out, and ultimately you're giving that asset owner what they expect and what they're paying for. And when we're talking about public works projects, you're talking about giving the people that are paying their taxes to build these things and to manage these things what they're paying for. So asset protection is a big part of it, and the best way to do that is make sure that everybody along the way is properly trained, properly qualified, and then at the end of the day gives people what they're paying for.
Yeah, I would even take it one step further and say that, it also helps ensure the safety of the general population. Because if you talk about something like you just mentioned, a tank of some sort, whether it's water or wastewater or oil and gas or what have you, if that coating is not applied properly or if it fails prematurely, then that could affect, the area as well, which could have huge implications for the environment in the local area. So great work, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And there's a lot, again, people don't think of what the inside of a tank looks like. I've seen it. My colleagues have seen what the inside of them looks like. Some of them are in great shape, some of them aren't. Some of them will make you want to drink bottled water every day. And the same thing goes for a bridge or something, a structure over a waterway. I'm sure we've all driven down the road and you've seen, tarps dangling off a bridge down into the water. You've seen holes in tarps and in containments. If the bridge was built prior to, 1970, 1971 time frame, there's a good chance that there's lead-based paint that's in there. If you're blasting that stuff off and it's falling down into the water, if you're not doing it correctly, you don't have your containment built properly, you don't have qualified workers working on it, a lot of that paint could end up in the water, which means you've got lead in the water. The fish eat the lead. People are pulling fish out of that river, lake, stream, whatever it might be, and then they're eating that and they're ingesting that lead. So there's another point where, the average person doesn't think about that, but it could have really negative effects if we don't have the right people doing that work. You need to be properly trained and follow safety procedures to get you home safe at the end of the day, but then, like you said, Stephanie, protect the public from, doing something improperly and potentially contaminating, the environment or the water.
Right. And you just mentioned tanks and bridges. Are there other substrates or assets, maybe I should say, that you guys kind of specifically work on over there?
We work on pretty much anything that could be painted. We have people painting it. We've got people working on bridges, theme parks, people working in DC on some of the buildings in DC, people working in nuclear power plants. We paint everything from, residential homes, stripes on the pavement, to again, nuclear power plants, theme parks, commercial structures. Just about anything can be painted. There's actually people that do painting underwater. They do it a little bit different, but there's actually people that do that type of work. And we represent, pretty much anybody that's in the industry. Any painting that's being done, we have members that are doing that type of work. For our contractors, we train to do pretty much anything they need. If they have a special project coming up, there's a new, again, new finish, new technique, new process. We'll work with the manufacturers and the vendors to be able to provide that training for our members and our contractors so that they can do that work and do that installation correctly.
Yeah, I think I just want to give one clarifying. I don't want to speak for you, but I do know this is a really sticky situation, or at least some people have very strong opinions. When you say paint, you mean linings, coatings, any sort of liquid applied, probably coating material. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. The general public typically calls it paint. For us, we do call it coatings, linings. A lot of times we'll just say paint because that's what your average person understands. I guess
Absolutely.
thinking about your audience does understand the difference in paint, protective coatings, linings, et cetera.
Yes, like I said, I know it doesn't bother me, but I think it can be a little a pain point for some people if they,
Sure.
yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Great. Any other sort of things you'd like to talk about today while we've got you on the phone? Challenges in the industry that we're working on, or where maybe you see the future of the industry heading? I mean, who knows these days, especially with what's going on, what we just talked about, but there's got to be some light at the end of the tunnel, right?
Yeah, boy, that's a hard one. I could actually talk about this kind of stuff all day. The thing that's probably the most important to me, is like we talked about a couple minutes ago, raising the bar in the industry and taking it to the next level. I don't think enough people understand that this is a skilled trade. This isn't just something that anybody can do. You don't run to your local big box store, buying a gallon of paint and slap it on a bridge. You don't. Not everybody can do this type of work. It takes special training. We talk about things in thousandths of an inch when we're applying these coating systems. You can't just walk out, grab a bucket, and then start painting. You have to do a proper installation, which means you need to be properly trained. And that's what it really comes back to is following standards, doing proper training, having qualified workforce, qualified contractor. There's a lot of people that went out when the economy got bad. Back in 2008, there was a lot of people that were painting houses that decided they could hang a shingle when the market dried up painting houses. They thought they could get into commercial and industrial painting, and they're not doing it correctly. It's not a union versus non-union issue. It's a properly installed system versus an improperly installed system, a qualified contractor versus a non-qualified contractor, a qualified applicator versus a non-qualified applicator. And raising the bar in the industry benefits everybody. And that's what we really look to do here. The good thing about me being in training is I don't have to get involved in the politics that go with, union versus non-union that a lot of people like to talk about. I get to focus on raising the bar in the industry. I get to focus on working with organizations that want to see the bar raised, give people what they're paying for. Do that proper installation of these protective coating systems. That's what it's really about for me and for the folks that I work with is taking it to the next level, and then providing that training that gives people the tools necessary, the skills necessary, to provide for their family for years to come home safe at the end of the day.
It's a great mission. Hopefully, we can continue making that happen moving forward. So, thank you so much for sharing everything with us today, Anton. If people want to reach out to you afterwards or find out more about IUPAT or the International Finishing Trades Institute, how can they do that?
If they are interested in IUPAT, IUPAT.org, they can go to IFTI.edu to reach out to us at Finishing Trades Institute specifically. I'm always happy to talk about protective coatings with anybody. If you're interested in what we do, interested in becoming involved, I'm happy to talk with anybody. Happy to share my views and contribute anything I can. So,
Well, we sincerely appreciate it on the Coatings Pro side. So thanks again so much for your time, Anton. Have a great one.
thank you. You too.
Once more, that was Anton Rusing, director of the IUPAT International Finishing Trades Institute. I think he's got a really interesting kind of take on the industry, and it was great to have him on the podcast today. So do reach out to him and get in for information if you'd like to follow up. It's ifti.edu. As always, there's information on coatingspromag.com pertaining to this specific topic, as well as all things coatings for concrete, steel, and roof substrates. So go ahead over there and check that out. Feel free to reach back if you have any questions, comments, ideas. We'd love to feature contractors in the magazine and online. So we're always open for chatting and feedback as well. So again, I'm Stephanie Chizik. I'm the editor-in-chief of Coatings Pro Magazine. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Stay healthy, and as always, happy coating.